from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Michael Krasny. Coming up, from statewide wildfires to PG&E power shutoffs, this October marks the first real crisis of Governor Gavin Newsom's first year in office. It's a situation former Governor Gray Davis remembers too well. California experienced rolling blackouts for months when he was governor. That led to his recall by voters. We'll hear his analysis of Newsom's response to the wildfires so far and what he learned from California's energy crisis that's relevant today. Then at 10:30, millions of people could be affected by PG&E's power shutdowns. We'll examine the economic impact of the outages, how much revenue has been lost by businesses. Join us on Forum right after this news. Welcome once again to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Michael Krasny. In this hour, we're continuing our coverage of the wildfires and power outages in California. Later in the hour, we'll take a look at the financial costs of the power outages and fires, but we begin with a look at the leadership challenges faced by Governor Gavin Newsom as he deals with these blackouts and fires. And we're joined by a former governor who had his own battles with rolling blackouts in 1999 and 2000, Gray Davis, who is now counsel of counsel with Loeb & Loeb LLC in Los Angeles. Governor Davis, welcome to Forum.
Hi, Scott. Good to be with you.
And I should say the governor joins us from Los Angeles. I'm just wondering, it's been a while, of course, since you were in office, but do you get sort of almost PTSD-like flashbacks as you hear about these power outages and, you know, another governor dealing with this problem, a very different problem, but nonetheless, no power?
There's nobody on the planet, Scott, that understands this simple truth. Electricity is good. Blackouts are not.
Take us back to that time, if you would. I mean, when you ran for governor in 1998, no one was talking about the electricity grid. And yet, when you took office, energy was deregulated in California. Talk about that learning curve and what it was like for you as you slowly, began to realize what the implications were of energy deregulation, not to mention what was happening behind the scenes with the manipulation of the market.
Well, I'll do it briefly because the facts I confronted were far different than the facts that Governor Newsom is confronting. And by the way, I think he's doing a very good job. I'll get to that in a moment. So when I took office, legislation passed 2 years before I was elected, deregulated the market. But the energy companies that were supposed to provide half our power decided instead of charging the utilities, say, $15 a megawatt per hour, they charge them $1,000 or $2,000. So they're bringing the utilities to their knees. But the same legislation, Scott, said you have to reduce the bills to your customers for the first 2 years of this deregulation process. So the ratepayers were not feeling the pain the utilities were feeling. It was very hard for me to explain to people why Enron, Duke, Reliant, the other energy companies were ripping off the state, because they were not getting a bill from those people. They were getting a bill from PG&E or Edison or some of the traditional utilities. Flash forward, we're now dealing with the 10 worst wildfires we've ever have occurred from 2015. 2017, the damages from wildfires, according to the insurance commissioner, were more money than the state spent on all forms of higher education. That's all UC campuses, all Cal State University campuses, and all community colleges. And it looks like 18 is going to be, when the numbers get in, will be far worse than that. So we're facing a real problem caused in part by climate change, very low humidity, high winds, and very little water in the state per se, particularly in Southern California. So those factors have made wildfires more prominent as a problem in 2019 than they were in 2003.
Now, talk about the range of priorities you have when you're governor. But you've got to be thinking about, the potential loss of homes and lives from wildfires, not what you had to deal with. It was a different kind of problem. But, you know, you're also dealing with the problems associated with the power outages at the same time. How do you imagine juggling all those things?
Well, I found that the lights went out, I think, five times in different parts of the state when I was governor, and there's nothing else that matters more to people than having power, to fuel any kind of company. We all have networks that go down. We have signals that go out, traffic accidents, elevators get stuck. Referring back to my experience, I remember going back to Washington to meet, at the request of the administration, a whole bunch of people, including Ken Lay and all the heads of the power companies and a lot of Washington officials. And I had two Republicans and two Democrats with me. They wanted us to raise rates on the customers. All the legislators agreed, Republicans and Democrats with me. Hey, this wasn't an idea the public wanted to deregulate. That was an idea the energy companies wanted. You said it'd be the cheapest form of power. Now it's bringing the utilities to our knees. We're not going to punish the ratepayers. 4 days later, power went out in San Francisco. I didn't know until I was out of office, but about a year after I was out of office, there were all kinds of videotapes of Enron telling its people in Las Vegas, and they powered parts of San Francisco, just go down and let the city go dark. So this was manipulation of the first order. We couldn't prove it until all these audio and video tapes came out, just catching these people red-handed. But the problems now are climate change, nature, low humidity, and what really has to happen is utilities and government have to up their game to confront a much bigger challenge the state is facing today in terms of natural disaster, if I can describe a wildfire as a natural disaster, than we had faced in 2003.
But at the same time, you know, we heard Governor Newsom expressing, complaining, criticizing PG&E about greed and corporate mismanagement. You have to balance that, though, because as you said, and as Governor Newsom has said, you know, we have to work with the utilities to fix this problem, to prevent the problem, but also to make, you know, ratepayers whole to the extent that that's possible. So you have to, it's really a balancing act, isn't it?
Yes, and don't forget wildfire victims. I mean, the worst fire we've ever had in terms of loss of life was Paradise. I happen to have two relatives living there, my sister-in-law and my niece living separately. Both those houses were burned into the ground, totally destroyed. They both literally had to flee for their lives. And my niece, Marguerite, is in a car, and it's like a parking lot trying to get out of Paradise because the city fathers thought, oh, we want more shopping, so we'll just have one lane in and one lane out of town. Well, that's good for shopping, but terrible for evacuation. So she gets on the other side of the median, driving against traffic, just hoping that some fire truck is not coming the other way. And just to hear the horror in her voice and how traumatized she was by the experience, you know that's the greatest problem we have is putting people in fear of losing their lives, losing their homes, and they have to go to the top of the list, in my mind, any fire victim, in terms of compensation, in terms of how we work harder to save lives, save property. And I might add, save the planet. There was a study by Beacon Economics in Northern California showing that the 2017 wildfires produced 9 times as much carbon, 900 times more carbon than our collective efforts statewide, which were successful, but we cleaned up X percent of global emissions, and the fire produced 900% more carbon emissions that year.
Yeah.
So whether it's climate change, saving lives or saving property, fighting wildfires has to have the same sense of urgency that we bring to fighting climate change.
Talking with former Governor Gray Davis, he is of counsel to Loeb & Loeb, LLP, talking with him about power blackouts, wildfires, and how Governor Gavin Newsom is handling what is really his first major crisis since taking office in January. Give us a call if you'd like at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or you can email us your questions and comments. It's forum@kqed.org. Governor, I talked to Governor Newsom yesterday, and I asked him, you know, about how he is thinking about this. I mean, this is a moment when you are having to obviously manage the state, you're talking, you're trying to reassure people, you're trying to comfort people, but you're also wanting to be strong and tough and have a certain level of criticism to express the anger that so many feel toward the utilities. And he said, you know, I'm not thinking about politics, which I know is the right thing to say. But how can you possibly avoid that when you are constantly in the limelight? You're going from shelter to command post. I mean, you have to be thinking about what kind of an image you're projecting, right?
Well, I was there for a number of natural disasters, including wildfires. And trust me, when you're in the moment, all you're thinking about is how are the victims being taken care of? Are they being relocated? Are the evacuation centers decent? I mean, do they have, can they charge their cell phones? I mean, you really do get caught up in the minutiae, if you will, of trying to be helpful to the people who are literally traumatized. I cannot overstate the anxiety and the fear that people who've felt the possibility that they may die live with for a very long time. And whether it's, you know, counseling later on or a whole range of services have to be made available to people to let them get through this, you know, enormously difficult moment in their time.
Gavin Newsom, of course, is following Jerry Brown, who I think many would say was an excellent governor the last 8 years, but very different in temperament and style from Gavin Newsom. One thing this governor likes to do is to kind of be in the trenches with people at shelters and so on. You know, what impact do you think that has or is having as he's there with the people who are affected, but, you know, also others seeing it on television and hearing it on the radio?
I think when people are hurting, a governor or a president has to be there. I learned that when I was lieutenant governor and President Clinton came out, we had a lot of flooding in Northern California, two or three floods in 1995. And I could just see how helpful it was for him to just be with people, put an arm around their shoulder, give them a hug, listen to them, let them tell their story. I mean, this, we're dealing with human beings now. A home is the center of your life. And when it is imperiled or destroyed, or someone you love is facing that moment, I mean, that's a very human moment. And to be there, as Gavin Newsom is, I think is extraordinarily memorable and important to people. If you help people out in their moment of peril, they will remember you for a very long time.
Unless you've dealt with this in a previous job, like a mayor, for example, dealing with an earthquake or some other disaster, you pretty much have to learn it on the job, right? I mean, it's some of it is learned. I guess some of it is natural. Some people are just, whether they're governor or anything else, more comfortable dealing with, you know, situations where you need to be empathetic.
It is, I guess, maybe the best preparation for this aspect of being a governor is if you were a social worker or if you've been dealing with people as they face a lot of adversity in life, maybe a minister or a cleric or a rabbi. But, I mean, this is raw human emotion, and as governor, you have to deal with it. This is a little off the topic, but I remember during the recall, I had someone screaming at me, and she says, you cost my husband his job. And I said, well, what department did he work for? And she says, oh, he didn't work for the department. He worked for Ford Motor Company. but, you know, I knew in her mind I was responsible, so you just have to let them tell you their story and let them and you have to feel their anger, and that's just part of being an adult, much less being a governor.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the phones. Again, we're talking with former Governor Gray Davis. If you want to join us, the number is 866-733-6786. And let's go to Laura in Orinda. You're first. Welcome.
Good morning. Good morning, former Governor Davis. I am just curious, as I see that it has been, you know, several decades of these power utilities kind of controlling seemingly the state and not really taking care of customers. And I see Oakland Hills as being one of the early signs that we really needed to get serious about, you know, power lines and being able to manage fires. And I'm just curious what you thought about it at the time. And
you're kind of dropping out a little bit, Laura, but I think we get the gist of your question. And, Governor, if I could just add to that, are there things that you wish you had done at the California, the CPUC, or in Washington for that matter, but for one reason or another you felt you couldn't or you just didn't do?
Well, my situation was so different. I'd rather, if the listeners want me to go in that, I will. But I mean, that my situation was total manipulation. Just for a second, part of the bill I inherited from my predecessor said the Public Utilities Commission had no power to regulate the energy companies. The energy companies were supposed to provide half our power, so you couldn't have the PUC crack down on them. Only the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, that was controlled by President Bush, and they were not they didn't care to be particularly helpful. In the long run, they were somewhat helpful, but in the short term, they were not. So, but I don't want to get off that point. I think we have to, given the fact that we've had so many wildfires that have been so devastating so recently, this is a problem we have to assume is going to be with us for a long time. We have to up our game. We have to get modern resources. Happily, thanks to Governor Brown's legislation and some good work Governor Newsom has done, we now have these infrared cameras in about 45% of the state. They are magnificent. In San Diego, there's not been a loss of life in 2 years since the cameras went up. They give a give the fire chief a firsthand glimpse of what's happening with the fire. He can see it on his iPhone, knows exactly how robust the flames are, how many trucks to send. And the same area I was standing in 2003, which caused 15 deaths in San Diego, the fire occurred in 2017. No deaths. It was put out in 55 minutes. So there is hope. You know, help is coming once we get these cameras employed throughout the entire state, which I suspect will take another year and a half at least. But they're already being installed in the PG&E service area as I talk. We're working with OES on that. But A, we have to think about land use planning. B, when we build houses, build them with fire-resistant material. C, what kind of vegetation should be allowed in terms of being more fire-resistant. Pre-positioning equipment, infrared cameras, which operate, by the way, when there's fire or smoke. And the information not only goes to every fire chief affected, but to the U.S. Forest Services and the Bureau of Land Management. And they were developed by California professors at UC San Diego and artificial intelligence at Berkeley. So all of those assets have to be deployed in a much more aggressive manner than we have in the past. We literally have to take wildfire as one of the most serious things that a governor has to deal with, whether it was in the Oakland Hills, which I've been many times, a beautiful area, but you know, a lot of one-lane roads in and out. Evacuation is very difficult. Getting fire trucks up there very difficult. So if you can spot these fires 80 miles away, which infrared cameras can, 120 miles at night, it's you can get on top of them within the first 30 minutes. The fires never reach, you know, the critical point where they start causing problems for life and property.
So yeah, prevention always, of course, the best.
Being on the offensive, which really means being on a fire within 30 minutes at the latest.
You mentioned that you know, President Bush was in office for some of your time as governor, and of course, one of the things Governor Brown and now Governor Newsom has to deal with is the Trump administration, which in some ways is at war, many ways is at war with California, and yet you need the federal government in times like these. How would you judge, what's your assessment of how Governor Newsom is dealing with that? He's been very critical of Trump on Twitter, you know, as recently as a few days ago, or at least a week ago. You know, what are your thoughts about how he's balancing that?
I think Governor Newsom has been more aggressive in his actions against wildfires than I can recall any governor being since the mid-70s. On natural disasters. I mean, we actually worked with him in the summer. I say we, the academics who came up with these infrared cameras. And by the way, a lot of firefighters, not all, but many, wear small infrared cameras on their uniforms because they transmit data, whether there's smoke or fire. Cell phone cameras do not. And he had a task force. He took their recommendations. He signed 21 bills upgrading our capabilities. He called for 100 new cameras to be deployed in areas where the utilities don't cover the state. He sent some of his people to work in Office of Emergency Services, told Office of Emergency Services they report daily to someone in his office. So he's totally on top of this problem. And some of the investments, these 21 bills he signed, will make will further enhance our readiness and our preparation. But he loves these infrared cameras and was able to get PG&E to greatly increase their commitment to how many cameras they would deploy.
But what about the criticism of the Trump administration? Because that, I mean, he has been very outspoken about that along the lines of especially climate, guns, many issues.
You know me, Scott. I don't like to gratuitously disparage people, but nobody on the earth knows what Donald Trump is going to say today, much less tomorrow, or do today or tomorrow. And if Gavin Newsom feels he's taking away a power, I'll give you an example. For 50 years, the federal government has allowed California to exceed the Clean Air Act standards because of our some of the areas in the Central Valley and in Southern California in particular. The smog gets trapped in the mountains, and we need to go farther than the Clean Air Act. No one has ever challenged that. Trump is trying to take that away. And our governor should stand up and fight for that, because I recall coming out here in the early 60s, the air was kind of orange, and people accepted that. People had incinerators in their backyard, and we made huge strides, but we're still out of compliance, and we need to have the power to do more than the federal government requires. So that's just one example where you want a governor to stand up and tell the president, hey, knock it off. We've had this power for 50 years. There's all kinds of scientific data that indicates why we have to do what we've done, and what we've done, starting with a catalytic converter to a whole bunch of other things, have been adopted around the country to the benefit of everyone.
Here's a comment from Brian, who writes, Governor Newsom is responsive on the scene and leading. Very impressed by him. Governor Davis, what are some of the mistakes that he should try to avoid? You know, when you're out there, you're on the fly, you're in some ways and sometimes making promises about things that may or may not be deliverable. I mean, what sort of potential landmines are there out there for any governor in a situation like this, but Governor Newsom in particular?
Well, when you're fighting Mother Nature, that's a risky proposition. So I just think people kind of have an intuitive sense, and I think they appreciate a governor who says, look, I own this problem. I understand how important it is. I'm taking charge, and I have a whole bunch of plans already in place. They will greatly enhance our readiness and our ability to respond more quickly. He's got these more sophisticated helicopters deployed. Again, Governor Brown funded them, but he's got them online and active in fires throughout the state. We used to be using these old Huey helicopters when I was in Vietnam War. I used to be flown around in those, and they're like 50, 60 years old and can't fly at night. Now we have very sophisticated cameras with can only drop water and fire retardants, but have infrared cameras in them, helicopters rather. So he's doing all the right things. I just ask people to be a little patient, because it may take a few more months before all these changes get implemented.
All right. Thank you so much, former Governor Gray Davis of Council at Loeb & Loeb in Los Angeles. Thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And we're going to continue after a short break. We're going to take a look at the economic impact of power outages in Sonoma County and throughout California. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. Stick around and hope to hear from you in the next half hour as well.